Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey guys, this is Brian Durbin, a.k.a. Mick Jagger from Hairbangers Ball, and you're watching Ages of Rock podcast.
Hey, welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast. This is Bill, Alan, Dennis, and Brian Durbin, a.k.a. Mick Jagger from Hairbangers Ball, joining us tonight, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing as well as one could be right now.
So being in a band that plays every weekend and or three times a week, you're stuck.
Yeah, for the most part right now. I mean, aside from our shows and the rehearsal, I gotta be honest, it's not too different than my regular life. I pretty much keep to myself a lot of the time, but the difference is I'm usually normally working, whether it's, you know, practicing, whether I do my second job is I'm the marketing director for the band. And I got no shows to promote right now. I've got no shows to play. I've got no songs to learn. Everything's really, really kind of up in the air right now. So it's not a fun time.
So for those folks that don't know about Hairbangers Ball, can you talk a little bit about what that is and how long it's been around and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Hairbangers Ball has been around in the Midwest for about 19 years this May. The Polly Pants started the band about 19 years ago at this point in time. And it's just the ultimate party 80s hair metal tribute band. We play all over the Midwest. We do about 120, 150 shows a year. And it's just a blast. And it's just a real shame that we can't do it right now. It's weird.
Bill's seen you, I know, numerous times, and all three of us actually went to the Bluebird here a couple years ago. That was my first time I've seen you, and like I said, I haven't been able to get, like I said, it's just for me, it's a two-hour drive for me at least, so it's just hard for me to see you guys, but any chance I would get, I would go see you guys, because it's a great show. It's an awesome show.
It was my first time seeing you guys as well, but it was not my first time with a bad Taco Bell experience.
Celebrated a little bit that night, so it was fun.
Yeah, the Taco Bell over on the corner. He's like, I'm going to Taco Bell. I'm like, dude, do not get Taco Bell. Not there. Don't go there.
You know what's really funny is I the Bluebird's door in the bathroom was broken this last time we were there, and everything we were all being germaphobic because of the coronavirus and stuff, and I went across the street to the Taco Bell to use the bathroom because, you know, that's sanitary. And I went into the men's room, and there was no toilet paper in there. No surprise. So then I had to, you know, I can get away with going in the women's room. So I went in there and took care of business. But it's really weird, like being careful of like touching stuff or whatever. This is off to a great start already. Sorry. With Taco Bell and diarrhea.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we normally talk shit on this show anyway. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, unfortunately, we're in a time now where we are. I mean, we're all like really. And I even made a comment the other day to a friend of mine. I said, you know, for years I've watched people where I work. I work in a factory at Toyota, actually, and I've watched people walk, you know, straight out of the bathroom from the shitter to the ice machine, stuck their hand in there. I was like, you know what? If anything this virus does, it teaches people to wash their fucking hands, you know, and I hope that continues, you know, because it's like, it's nasty. So anyway.
Well, I'm doing it so much, like my hands are getting raw.
Oh, and then, me too. Yeah. I work with a nurse, so, you know, I know how to do it. And
you live with a nurse, you don't work with her.
Exactly. No.
This is going to be a really weird podcast for anyone to watch in the future.
Well, I have washed my hands so much I can no longer be a hand model.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a bummer.
I lost my fingerprints today, actually.
Are you master of your domain, though?
Yeah.
Seinfeld reference.
There you go.
So anyway.
I did get to go to the last show, though. So the last show was in Bloomington at the Bluebird, which you guys play there once a month typically, right?
Yeah, usually anywhere between 3 to 4 weeks we're there, I feel like.
Yeah. It's usually a good crowd. It was weird. It was that was the show that when the state of Indiana changed to where you couldn't have, like, 2 days before the show, right? They changed where you couldn't have more than 250 people in a venue.
Yeah.
So I raced to get tickets to make sure I had 2 tickets. So this is going to go out, and they're going to be going, "You did not practice social distancing." And I'm like, "Yes, I did." Because
they were talking about social distancing then, and there wasn't a case in that county yet. We played in Peoria that weekend, and we played in Bloomington that weekend too. And, you know, we live in our own bubble. So we weren't even – I mean, we had heard that this thing, coronavirus, was going around, but we're like, Ebola, swine flu, you know, we've seen this before. This is just something that they do every 2 years or whatever. And so we didn't really fully understand the severity of it. There weren't any cases in that county that weekend, but there were a couple times while we were on stage that weekend we're like, "Oh no, I don't know if we should be here right now." I mean, they were great shows. They were a lot of fun, but you definitely felt really guilty while you were on stage, or at least I did.
Right. Because you guys are based out of Chicago, right? Northern Indiana, Chicago area. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's more prevalent up there. I mean, you've got a lot more cases and everything. And once you start traveling down, it's not that bad. But anyway, no, it's a different situation. Bill, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in on that.
No, that's all right. I thought it was an interesting show because it was definitely not as packed as it usually is. I mean, it was by far less people there. But I really went. Ironically, I hadn't planned to go, but when you played the band of the month, it was going to be Dokken, which is like one of my favorite bands. I'm like, "Dude, we gotta go." I told my wife, I'm like, "They're playing Dokken. I really want to go." And she's like, "Okay." But we actually had warrant tickets. I had told you about that we had warrant tickets for earlier in the evening over here in Brown County, which is, you know, kind of on the way to Bloomington from our house. And that got canceled and moved to June 5th, which it'll probably get canceled again, most likely. Right. But I was like, I can hit both shows. I can go to warrant. It'll be over by around 10. Then I can race over to Bloomington, be there in 45 minutes, hit them around the time they hit the stage. I was like all in my head, had it all planned. So then the warrant thing got canceled. I'm like, "Sure, we can make it no time." And then, but the Dokken stuff was great, man. It was great to hear you guys do that stuff. And especially Lynch Mob, Wicked Sensation was freaking awesome. That was out. Just, I pulled out, you go, "We're going to play something Dokken-ish." And I'm like, "What?" And then you said it was going to be Lynch Mob. And I was like, "Holy crap." And me and the dude sitting next to me sang the entire thing, it was cool. We kept looking at each other, jamming out. It was cool. It was really neat.
I'm sure it was his low point of the night. Hearing you sing, Bill.
Trust me. The sound was set for the full bar, not sure. For 250 people. It was a little loud at some points.
Yeah. Gotta love Dwayne. Thank you, Dwayne. That was awesome. But it was a real bummer for us because we worked our asses off to put those songs together because, you know, not everyone's a musician out there, but those songs are really fucking hard. And we worked really hard to do them. Yeah, we only got to play them for like 4 shows. It was interesting to see because some crowds, they would be really receptive of it. And then other ones, you know, like every crowd really enjoyed when we did It's Not Love. And then most people, you know, they seemed to kind of just be bobbing their heads to Dream Warriors. And then we would get a great crowd response when we were done for that. In my dreams, we might as well have been playing one of our own songs right then. I could not believe because that was the top requested song. And then I was shocked. Just nobody.
Yeah.
The people that voted for it on – because the reason we picked the Lynch Mob song, just to give you a little bit of background story, is because we all couldn't agree on a fourth Dokken song. Every band of the month, we normally do four songs from that band, at least. With Motley Crue, we'll do 8, just because we all love Motley Crue and everybody loves Motley Crue. But Dokken is something that's a little bit – they were an A-level band at the time, but they clearly haven't aged as well as some of the other bands have. Like, you don't hear Dokken songs in sporting arenas like you hear Pour Some Sugar on Me or Welcome to the Jungle and stuff like that. Like, those songs are like almost American hymns at this point in time. But Dokken, for some reason, I don't know why, but it just hasn't stood the test of time the way some of the other stuff has, which is really unfortunate because I love Dokken. But yeah, so when it came time to learn these songs, we had made a post because we planned Band of the Month really, really far in advance. And we made a post about a year ago on Facebook and Instagram. And it was just like, hey, we've been talking about doing some Dokken, but none of us can agree to which songs we're actually going to play, because it is a lot of work to learn songs, and especially Dokken songs. So, you know, we want to make sure that they count, and people are arguing over their personal preferences versus what's going to go over well, kind of a thing. And it just can lead to a lot of butting heads. So I actually went through the Facebook post and the Instagram post and tallied out every single comment. It was really tedious, but I did it because it was the only fair way to do it. I was like, well, if these people want to hear Dokken, let's just play the songs that they want to hear. And it was, the top one was In My Dreams, It's Not Love, and Dream Warriors. And then the fourth one was Alone Again. And the band really fought me on that one because wants to drink, party, and sing the songs they know. I mean, we have a tough time selling you know, certain songs by the really big bands, let alone, you know, a ballad by Dokken. So we couldn't agree to that. And then eventually CC was like, well, we should just do Wicked Sensation. And then we were all just kind of like, all right, yeah, that's cool with us. Let's just do Wicked Sensation. So that's what we did.
We did a hell of a job on it, man. It was good.
It's cool. Thank you. That was actually the worst of it out of the four shows. So I appreciate you hearing that. I appreciate you saying that.
Well, that's good. Yeah, there were a few challenges that night. Yeah. Yeah, there were a few. So talk a little bit about the band. So you've got some new members. You got some new members in the last year. It's changed over a little bit. How often does it change? I know that's.
I feel like the shelf life for a Hairbangers Ball member is probably about 5 years or so. I would say I think I wrote it down and averaged it at one point in time, just because I'm that tedious. But yeah, I would say, you know, the reality of it is. It's a really taxing job. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's great. And like, I think most people, you know, when they leave the band or whatever, I think they look back on it later and they, you know, Hairbangers Ball was, if not the best, one of the best times of their life. But I mean, you know, we're playing every Friday and Saturday and then some in the summer. And, people get burnt out over time. You know, people get burnt out with any band, but the difference between us and Kiss is Kiss can take off 9 months out of the year and not be, you know, but then they'll tour constantly for 3 months. Hairbangers Ball is always playing and we're always learning new material. We're our own roadies too. You know, we don't have like a road crew or anything like that. So, it definitely wears on you after a while. Right. But it's, you know, there are lifers and then there aren't. And I'm, you know, and that's no disrespect to anyone who's not in the band anymore. Like, I get it when people, you know, most of the time people leave the band on their own fruition. It's just, you know, it's a hard thing to make. You know, it's not like we all have like stock options and 401ks with this or whatever. I mean, you know, so, I mean, you know, when it becomes not for you, you know, we would never want anyone to be in the band who doesn't want to be in the band anymore. Right. You know, there's plenty of people who do want to be in the band, you know, it's unfortunate because people get attached to certain members and stuff. You know, I mean, you're a Kiss fan. I'm a Kiss fan. You know, my favorite guitar player for Kiss is Bruce Kulick. He hasn't been in the band for 2 decades. But I still, you know, I found the unplugged version of Kiss. Like, the first version of Kiss that I saw, they weren't even wearing makeup. I just like the music. And so, you know, everybody has their periods of the band that they love, and, you know, I've certainly got mine, and happy to say right now, you know, I don't think there's a better 80s hair metal tribute band in the world right now. Like, you know, I would, you know, I mean, certainly I'm not saying we're perfect. We've got plenty of room to improve upon, but pound for pound, I don't think there's a better 80s hair metal tribute than Hairbanger's Ball right now.
That's cool. Well,
I wish we could be playing right now.
No kidding. How long do you think it's going to be? I mean, what's your, I know nobody really knows, but it's going to be probably what, at least a month or two, at least month or two is what they're looking at. I'm gathering. So.
I tend to make estimates that err on the side of caution. I'm planning on not seeing anybody until our first club date. Mostly in the fall. I mean, because if you've got to think about all of these festivals, they're taking financial risks just even putting them on. So I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping that we can be back out in a month or two, but I'm preparing for the worst and knowing I'm looking at our schedule and I'm seeing all festivals all the way solidly through from June through October, which is what we want. And I'm personally seeing the writing on the wall that, you know, why would somebody pay for all of that to happen?
Right.
In uncertainty, you know, so we'll see. I don't know. Hopefully we can flatten this curve.
There you go. That's the key word, right? That's one of the words.
Yeah.
Flatten the curve. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So you talked about being a Kiss fan. We talked about that before. So, what era at Kiss then is your favorite? Is it, I know you said Bruce, but what is it? Bruce and Eric Carr, Bruce and Eric Singer? Does it matter?
Really? I think, God, that's tough. That's tough. It would probably be anywhere between like 85, basically any time that Bruce was in the band up until, yeah, I would say like Asylum through Revenge. Those are my favorite. Those are my favorite Kiss albums, but I love all the 70s stuff too. You know, Alive is, you know, the most energetic live album of all time.
Do you like the Carnival of Souls album?
I like Carnival of Souls, but I like it because, you know, the songs are still great, but that's not the style of Kiss that I think Paul Stanley said it best, like when he was talking about writing the songs for that album, he's like, you know, all of the motif of the time was everything was down and dark and grungy and stuff. He's like, we were millionaires. What were we supposed to do? Complain about the fact that the butler was late? You know,
I mean, that's one of my favorite. Actually, I like Carnival of Souls a lot. It took me forever to get a really good copy of it, you know, because the bootleg came out previous. And like I said, it is a grungy version of Kiss. I think it's a lot of Bruce. I mean, actually, Bruce, there's more influence of Bruce in that album than Gene and Paul. I honestly believe.
Yeah, something like 7 co-writes on that album.
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, it is. And the thing is Kiss is never, ever, number one, he never toured it, and never really, they've never embraced that album. It's just one of those ones where we're going to release this not even as an album, it's the last sessions kind of situation with Bruce, and then before, of course, you know, the reunion tour. So they've never embraced that album. You know, you're not going to hear one of those songs in concert, you know, ever.
I'd flip it.
I have to say, I saw Bruce on the Kiss Cruise sing his own song off of that album. That's cool. That was really cool. And the crowd lit up pretty well too. So, you know, on Bruce's behalf, I was really pleased to see that because, you know, Bruce has kind of been the redheaded stepchild of Kiss, if you will.
Right.
Well, I think that seat is reserved for Vinnie Vincent, but
no, Vinnie Vincent is the dog. Say his name on our show. In the band.
Is that a dirty word here?
It's a dirty word. That's the dirty. I didn't realize it was four letters. That's why we have an explicit lyrics. That's why I have an explicit content thing on here. Only if you say his name.
I love that album. I love Rain. I love Master and Slave.
Great stuff.
There's a lot of great songs on that album, but it pales in comparison to for me, for 85 all the way to 92. Those are like. And I say it pales in comparison only because those are like my favorite albums of all time. Asylum.
And it's really cool because of, you know, your perspective on the whole situation. I mean, you're a huge Kiss fan just like us, but with your age, you know, those were your albums when you were just coming of, you know, getting into rock and stuff. So that's your introduction to Kiss. You know, my introduction to Kiss was, of course, you know, the early stuff. So right. You know, to me, that actually is a great thing. I like those albums, but to me, I'm still a hardcore '70s guy. And sure. but it doesn't make it any better or any least, the thought of it. It's just a matter of, you know, it's what our preference is. But it's great that everybody though agrees on they're just a great band. It's just a matter of what decade or what. When you're around for over 40 years, that's what you're going to get, basically. So,
yeah, I just love that band. I mean, the reason why I think the I lean towards the 80s and early 90s stuff with Kiss is just because, I mean, first of all, Paul Stanley was, in my opinion, in that time period, I don't think there was a better lead vocalist than Paul Stanley. I would put him up with Dio. I would put him up with Bruce Dickinson. I would put him up with any of the singers that are always heralded as the best, rock and metal singers of all time. I mean, in fact, I was in a voice lesson today, and my vocal coach was looking at me. He's like, started talking to me about 80s Kiss, and I was like, dude, Paul Stanley is my favorite fucking singer of all time, and we were just going over Lick It Up and some other stuff like that. So it was really cool. Just great fucking band. But the 70s stuff is incredible too. I mean, the coolest thing too is like when the 80s band would do some of the 70s stuff, like on the Hot in the Shade tour or on the Revenge tour. Those are some of the best versions of those songs I've ever heard, and it was really cool to hear, you know, like when Eric Singer is kind of embellishing the parts on Alive 3, and just hearing Paul sing the songs the way he probably always wanted to sing them, but maybe he didn't have those notes when he first started out. I can't say enough. I could talk about Kiss all day, but.
and in Hot in the Shade also, Paul was at his peak. I mean, that was around the Unplugged also. I mean, Paul's voice was at his peak, you know, and then it's, you know, went a different way since then, but we still love Paul, you know,
forever. Nothing lasts forever. I mean, that's,
yeah,
he's not alone in that. It's just, it probably feels different to us because, you know, Kiss is my band, you know? So I feel it a little bit more, you know, than like Robert Plant. You know, Robert Plant wants to play folk music right now. You tell him to sing Communication Breakdown in the original key. I don't think that he'd be able to do that either. So, yeah.
So did you get to see the, have you seen the tour? Have you seen the final tour? End of the road tour.
I've seen it two or three times. And one of them, I actually, when I saw them in Milwaukee, I actually spoiled myself and I got a front row seat and I was front row center. It was awesome.
Cool. Good great for show. You, man. Yeah. That's awesome.
It was really cool. But I think the thing about that's different about me and then some of the other people in my generation is we look at the Kiss catalog in hindsight. Whereas you guys, you know, I don't know when you guys when did the three of you find Kiss?
I found them in 1975.
75.
So, yeah. So
78
yeah.
or 79 for me.
Yeah. So the majority of their catalog has watched them release it. So for me, I got to, you know, I had the first Kiss tour that I saw was the Farewell tour, which is hilarious. But I had the tour book, and it showed like all the albums in there, and there was, you know, there's some biographical stuff. So I kind of knew what was coming when I decided to put on music from The Elder or Unmasked or anything like that. And I like all those albums too, because I knew what I was getting going into it. You guys, on the other hand, I would have been fucking pissed if the band that released Strange Ways and, you know, Mainline and fucking Black Diamond all of a sudden is releasing Just a Boy as their first song. Like that.
Right. I'm still pissed. I'm still pissed about it. I'm still pissed to this day.
There were some lean years for Kiss for me. I mean, like I said, Dynasty was one of those ones. My best friend Matt DeVille, I mean, he gave up at that point. He checked out. Actually, he checked out at Unmasked. I kept going. Dynasty was tough on him. I liked The Elder when it came out. But anyway, Bill so freaked out, he froze up.
Yeah, his face is just wide open. Somebody should grab a screenshot of that right now.
Oh, well, it's on the video. So.
Man.
Oh,
there he is.
There he is.
He's like,
I froze up.
So,
damn it.
So Bill sent a text and said, stop. Are we locked up or is it me? It's just you, Bill.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's why I have
too many people trying to get my stuff.
One of the perks of not having a kid at home anymore, I don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding. Everybody's using the internet right now. So.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Hey, we got to do what we got to do in these times.
That's right. So besides Kiss, what are some other bands that you like, Brian? You mean there's more bands than Kiss?
There is more bands than Kiss. But Aerosmith was the band that got me into music, and I still am infatuated with Steven Tyler, and just, you know, to this day, he's just incredible. And he is probably, I would say, Paul Stanley is my personal favorite, but pound for pound, I think Steven Tyler has stood the test of time the best of all of the 80s. 70s, sorry. All of the classic frontmen of the time, I think Steven Tyler, you know, you can still see him live and just be blown away by any given performance that he does. But I also like Motley Crue, Skid Row, Whitesnake, Van Halen, all the stuff that's in the Hairbangers Ball set list. I'm really lucky to be able to play pretend and make believe every Friday and Saturday and make a living doing it. So it's cool for me. But yeah, no, you name it. If it's in the Hairbangers Ball set list, I like it.
Is there a band that's not in the set list that you'd like to see in the set list?
That's a tough question. 'Cause there's a lot of stuff. The tough thing about looking at our shows from my point of view is some of my favorite songs I hate doing live. And it's not because I hate those songs. It's because in my head, when you hear Heaven's on Fire, the whole room should be erupting and singing along to it and stuff. And, you know, as much as I love that song, and it does well, it's a B-level song in the Hairbangers Ball set list. It's not going to go over the way Sweet Child of Mine does. It's not going to go over the way Rock and Roll Night does. It's not going to go over the way Jump does. And, you know, when we're on stage, as much as I like certain songs, it's not about us anymore. It's about the crowd, and it's about everyone having a good time. And, you know, I mean, it's still about us because we love that music, but you can't be selfish. And, you know, I mean, like, we're not going to play any Blue Murder songs anytime soon, even though that would be incredible. You know, we're not going to play. We even did Give Me All Your Love Tonight when we did Whitesnake Band of the Month. And we did a really good job on that song. crickets. People wow. just look like, what was
Isn't
that?
Crazy? Isn't that crazy?
Because it's not one of those songs that is still played in sporting arenas. It's not one of those songs that you hear on the radio anymore. And a lot of the towns that we play in, songs really rely on what media is prevalent in that town. Like when we play in Wisconsin, if we don't have, you know, some deep cuts in our set list like that, they're looking at us like, what are you doing? AC/DC is not a hair metal band. But in Chicago, anybody with long hair is an 80s hair metal band. Like, you know, we get requests for Queen. We get requests for Journey. We get requests for Metallica and stuff. Metallica, I think, would put a bullet through their head if you were comparing them to an 80s hair metal band. But some of the places we play, Metallica is hair metal. Because that's how that town remembers it. So it's really interesting for me, you know, because, you know, when I think of an 80s hair metal band, I think of Danger Danger and Dirty Rhythm and, you know, all those, you know, deeper bands. But the way I understand 80s hair metal music is, unfortunately, is not the way that the general public understands it. Every region is different. It's the really interesting portion for us. Is
well,
every
and being, sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to repeat it again. I don't know.
No, I'm just saying for a band like what you have, and being that you are going, you know, you're just not sitting in Chicago, you're not sitting in Indianapolis, you're not sitting in one town. By traveling and doing the kind of tribute band that you're doing, you can't do really the deep cuts. You have to have it, and like you said, you have to make that set list work with every place that you go to, you know what I'm saying, where you don't have to. I mean, I'm sure you can change up songs here and there. If you know something, you know, goes over well, say, in Bloomington, then it doesn't go over in Chicago. But on the general whole, you have to make that set list work everywhere. So you have to do the ones that everybody knows. You know, you can't do the deep cuts. Like you said, Milwaukee will understand that one, but you go someplace else, they're going to go, what the fuck's that? You know, kind of deal. So, I mean, I'm sure that's a tough thing. You know?
I wish we could do a little bit more Cinderella than we get away with. You know, I'd like to do Somebody Save Me. I'd like to do I Want to Be Somebody by Wasp. But it's just picking and choosing those moments. You know, every month, you know, since I'm the marketing person for the band, I post in all the event pages. When I know that, like, let's say we're doing a show on May 1st, the first week of April, I'll post in the event page for that show and I'll be like, we can't wait to come to the Vogue Theater. We're going to be bringing in a whole new band of the month with us. Who do you hope it's going to be? And there's a bunch of marketing reasons why I do that, but also for the band, I want to know what band of the month do people want us to do. And every single time, it's always Motley Crue is always the number one one. Even though we did Motley Crue for 2 months in a row back in April and May, people are already they're already ready for us to do Motley Crue band of the month again. I posted that in some event page back in January, and one of the shows, people had their top requested band was Def Leppard, and I know full well we did Def Leppard Band of the Month back in November. So, you know, I have almost thought about making Band of the Month be like a calendar year, like, you know, May is Motley May, or, you know, Def December or stuff like that, Judas January, like, or whatever, like, I don't know, like, because when you get outside of Bon Jovi, Poison, Motley Crue, Def Leppard, in this band, it's really hard to find four songs that the majority of the people there still know. Like when we did Rap Band of the Month, we did You're in Love, Lay It Down, obviously Round and Round. I can't remember what the last one was, and there's probably a reason for that.
Would it be Way Cool Junior?
No, we didn't do Way Cool Junior. Gosh, I can't remember which one it was.
Must have been a good one then.
You're in Love, Lay It Down. I know we've done I Want a Woman before, but we didn't do that this most recent time. Back for More. Back for More.
I just had it in my head. I was trying to get to the chorus, like a dun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did it again. Thank you guys. Somebody like that.
So it's tricky to find a way to, you know, because we always get people asking us, you know, that's the whole reason why we just did Dokken Band of the Month, is because everybody was like, when are you guys going to play some Dokken? And, you know, we planned it out a year in advance, and we've picked the right time to do it, looking at what venues were on our calendar. And then the number one venue that we were looking forward to playing it at was the City Center in Champaign, because Champaign, Illinois, the people love the deeper 80s stuff over there. And then, you know, we were supposed to be there last Friday, and no Dokken so far.
And the top song that you picked didn't go over well. I mean, the one that was picked.
The one that was requested the most.
Requested the most, then didn't go over. It's like,
yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
All right, I want to take Bill's question and do a 180 on it. He asked what you would like to add. I'll ask, are there any songs in the set list that you would like to take out?
No. And next. I'll introduce a caveat to that. There are certain songs in our set, you know, like in a perfect world, if I was doing Hairbangers Ball just for myself and I had a whole audience full of people like me in the crowd, all of the stuff, like, as much as I love the stuff, like AC/DC, Metallica, Journey, Joan Jett, Iron Maiden, as much as I love Aerosmith. Aerosmith is not – if it was a whole crowd full of people like me, we would be playing stuff that is strictly traditionally 80s hair metal music. Cinderella, Rat, Kicks, Quiet Riot, Twisted Sister, you know, the bands that are actually tried and true – by definition, 80s hair metal bands. That's what, if I could play to a room of 500 me's, those would be, you know, maybe we'd take a shot at some Steelheart or something like that, or some Firehouse, but I'm not playing to a room full of me's. So the only thing that I would say is there are certain songs that I don't mind passing to somebody else. Like, I like doing all the 80s hair metal stuff in the band. But, you know, if John wants to sing a Journey or an Iron Maiden song, I have no problem, you know, backing anyone up on that. Or like the Joan Jett, you know, Heart, anything like that. Even because that's not – I don't have a passion for that music. I mean, Journey's great. Iron Maiden's great. Joan Jett is great. Heart is great. But I don't love that music the way – I love Motley Crue and Skid Row, kind of a thing. So I wouldn't take anything out. I would just give myself a much needed breather on the songs that I'm not as passionate about, I guess you would say.
That's a good answer.
That's fair.
Yeah. It is hard after a while. Like, you eventually, you know, you do like 7 songs in a row and you put 110% into them. And eventually you're like, oh, fuck. What is somebody else going to sing right now?
I've had a few of those songs where it's like I just cringe and I go into, you know, 3.5 minutes of just going through the motions and just get it over with and then, you know, change this. You know, I'm bad about that.
Even if there's a song in our set that I like, I'm not a big fan. You will never find me listening to I Love Rock and Roll for fun. But I love performing that song because it's easy and people go nuts right at the first time. Down, as soon as that. So, I mean, it's a different sort of perspective. Whereas, like, you know, some of the times we play Wild Child by Wasp is probably, it's in the top 5 of favorite songs that Hairbangers Ball has done. And I liken that song to a 4-minute fart whenever we do it because, and I love that song.
And that's one of my favorite, that's one of my favorite Wasp songs.
But it's, when it's a Hairbangers Ball show, if it's not appropriately placed, like whenever somebody requests it, I'm like, you motherfucker, seriously, you're gonna fucking make the whole room smell this stink right now. Like, you, all right, here we go. I'll play the game. Work.
Make a note of that the next time in Bloomington.
I'd be impressed. Four-minute fart's actually kind of impressive. So that's it.
Hashtag four-minute fart.
There are some people at our shows where they've been able to go on for longer. There was one time we were doing a show at the Bluebird, and somebody must have thrown a stink bomb, and we all just were puking during – not actually puking, but I was really close. I think we were doing Crazy Train. I could barely sing the song. I was laughing so hard and gagging. It was probably a terrible experience for anybody else there, but we thought it was hilarious and disgusting.
So do you have any venues that are your favorite venues to play? Is there any
well, I mean,
that's someplace you guys look forward to on the set. I mean,
you've got to give it to the Bluebird, of course, because like, I mean, I don't think pound for pound, there's a better, you know, rock club of that size in the world. If there is, I haven't heard, like, there's nowhere where people bring energy like that. And the cool thing about the Bluebird is there's all different ages of people there. You know, you've got college kids, you know, there's senior citizens that come. I mean, there's all different types of people. And you sit in the crowd sometimes and you're looking at who's out there, and you're wondering, like, I wonder what made this person come to this show? Because, you know, it's not like our shows are packed full of guys that look like me or anything like that. There's all different types of people at our shows, and you just sit there and you wonder, you know, why is there a 21-year-old here? Like, how do they know this music? Or by proxy, you know, there's like a 68-year-old woman who comes to almost all of our shows over at the Bluebird, and you sit there and you wonder, like, well, this is after her time. What makes her come here for this? I mean, I know I'm magnificent looking, but I'm
just... Yeah, I was going to ask that question because it's true. You know, I've been as many shows as I've been to, it's always a mix of people, but in Bloomington especially, and I'm sure that's when you play, you know, when you play over in Illinois and you're playing college campuses, when that stuff happens, I'm sure that, you know, you get that college crowd. But you know, this week was, or that time, and you know, spring break had just started too. So I was like, man, there's not going to be very many kids there. But there were a group of 20 year old college kids in front of us, and they were going ape shit bananas. So it just, you know, and it's cool to see that. And here's what I do. I chalked it up to good parenting.
Yeah.
My 22-year-old's been. I brought my 22-year-old, my 25-year-old. I brought my, at the time, well, the one that's 19 now, he's been going to some show that we could find that he could go to since he was probably 15 or 14 or 15. I mean, they go to all kinds of shows. They always have. And I just chalked it up to good parenting.
Yeah. That could be it. Like I said, like, these songs are almost like American hymns at this point in time. So, I mean, it just, you know, when you think of rock music, you know, over the years, you know, you've got one representation of 70s rock, you've got one representation of 80s rock, 90s rock. After you get to 90s rock, you don't really know what is 2000s rock, what is 2010s rock, what is 2020s rock going to be. There's not a whole lot of it. So, now at this point in time, a lot of these songs are just rock songs. They're just, these are the big rock songs that anybody thinks of when you go see any given rock band, or, you know, these are the songs that have stood the test of time. And these are the songs that are the best representative of rock and roll. And I think that, you know, whether it's, you know, like, when I was growing up, my parents didn't listen to this type of music, so I'm not an example. My parents listened to country when I was growing up, and then my dad started being like, remembering his high school times, and, you know, told me about Kiss and stuff like that. And actually, he was being a real asshole to me when I was a kid, because I was a really big Aerosmith fan, and he would just say stuff to fuck with me from time to time, like, you know how Steven Tyler hits those high notes, right? I'd be like, I don't know. He's like, well, he just gropes himself really hard so he can sing them. I'm like, no, he doesn't. Steven Tyler's not like that. and stuff. And then he would fuck with me and just make me think that Aerosmith sucked or whatever. And then he would just be like, just to be a dick. But then he would just finally one day he was like, you know, if you like Aerosmith so much, you should check out Kiss. They're like Aerosmith but better. And I was like, after that point, I was like, fuck Kiss. Like, nobody's better than Aerosmith. And then he was telling me, like, about all the characters. He's like, yeah, there's one guy who dresses up as a demon. There's one guy who dresses up as a spaceman. There's a guy who, like, wears this star on his eye. And there's a guy who dresses up like a cat. And 7-year-old me is like, what a bunch of pussies. There's a guy who dresses up like a cat? That's fucking lame. Star on his eye? What's that all about? Turned out rough. But...
yeah. Good parenting.
But they have these talismans that give them the power, you know what I'm saying? No.
For sure.
Yeah, no shit. Awesome. All right. Yeah,
I hope we get to see you out soon. That'll be good.
I hope to be out soon. Yeah, because this is, like I was saying, it's not too different than my regular week life. It's just the only difference is I'm not working, so I'm just kind of sitting here and just waiting.
Yeah, that sucks.
Stay the fuck inside so I can get back out.
Flatten that fucking curve.
Yeah, no shit. Flatten the curve.
That's hilarious. All right, Brian, thanks, man. We appreciate you being on with us for a little while tonight.
It's always a blast. Sorry if I talked about Kiss too much.
No such thing.
No such thing.
Not a problem for me at all.
All right, folks, y'all know what to do. Visit agesofrock.com. Hit us up on social media. Till next week, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.